Welcome to the Mr. Constitution Hour with Douglas B. Gibbs, a broadcast that examines our ever-changing world through the lens of the United States Constitution. Douglas B. Gibbs is on the air.
Hello, my friends. Douglas V. Gibbs here, Mr. Constitution. This is the Mr. Constitution Hour, KPRZ, on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. or on your favorite podcast platform the week after. And this week we've had some interesting news, and the Constitution is definitely involved. And I'm going to start with, and this is a few days ago, the Mayorkas impeachment trial. And so the what happens when it comes to impeachment is the House may impeach, and then the hearings are held by the United States Senate. So impeachment does not mean removal from office. Impeachment means to indict. So if someone's been impeached, they've been indicted. They have been charged. That is what impeachment means. So once an impeachment then by the House of Representatives is established, is voted on, and it is approved by a majority, then it goes to the United States Senate to hold a hearing. Understand that impeachment hearings, an impeachment trial, is a political trial. It is not a criminal trial. So it's not about, you know, putting handcuffs on someone and putting them in an orange jumpsuit should they be guilty. It's about removal from office or other punishments, and typically removal from office, high crimes, misdemeanors, all of that. So when the articles of impeachment were approved and sent by the United States House of Representatives to the United States Senate this week regarding Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas, most people did not believe that the impeachment would result in a conviction. In fact, everybody I talked to, not a single person, suggested that a conviction was possible, much less a trial. Now, some worried that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the Democrat from New York, Chucky Schumer, would simply say no to it and just say, we're not going to do it. And a trial would never get off the ground. Someone asked me earlier this week if Schumer could pull such a stunt. And what I responded was, the Senate is obligated to hold a hearing. And that's true according to the Constitution. Article 1, Section 3, when the Constitution addresses the U.S. Senate's responsibility to try all impeachments, the word shall is used, meaning that their task to try all impeachments is mandatory. Now, with Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas charged with maladministration of his office by failing to execute the laws of the Union, the House of Representatives had every right and duty to impeach him. And the U.S. Senate had every duty and responsibility to hold the hearing. The United States Senate disagreed with the whole thing. The political ideology of a slim majority believed the whole thing had no business even existing in the first place. And with a vote of 51-49, talk about a slim margin, they voted down even entertaining a hearing regarding the impeachment, treating it as a waste of their time. And Schumer called it unconstitutional. Now, according to Article 2, Section 3 of the United States Constitution, the President of the United States shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. When we talk about the President of the United States, we're not just talking about the President himself, but the branch of government that he runs, which is the executive branch. So all of those departments, all of those agencies, all of that falls under that idea of the executive branch executing the laws of the United States. Therefore, the department leaders like Mayorkas, they are tasked with carrying out the laws, executing the laws of the United States. So immigration laws are being violated by a massive amount of people who are crossing the border without much of any obstacle put up by the current regime in the White House. The Biden administration refuses to execute the laws on the books regarding immigration, and the executive department asked with carrying out those laws is the Department of Homeland Security. But rather than going after President Joe Biden for violating Article 2, Section 3 of the United States Constitution for failing to carry out immigration laws, the House of Representatives first went after the officer tasked with the duty, Alejandro Mayorkas. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer argued otherwise. considering the impeachment merely a political show by the Republicans, Schumer accused the GOP representatives from the House of not being prepared and offering a frivolous and political waste of time. He couldn't be bothered with it. They got better things to do, was the attitude. Impeachment should never be used, he said, to settle policy disagreements. It would set a disastrous precedent for Congress, could throw our system of checks and balances into cycles of chaos. Anytime the House wanted to shut the Senate down, Schumer said, they would just send another impeachment resolution and would create frivolous impeachment trial after impeachment trial. So, this is once again Schumer talking, I felt it really important with dangerous precedent, notice the words there, dangerous precedent, you know, these Republicans are dangerous, was not the one the Republicans were talking about, but the one of letting impeachment take the place of policy disagreements. I'm going to address that in a minute. That's not what this is. It's not a policy disagreement. That's what he's calling it. So anyway, Schumer continued. Cabinet person after cabinet person could be subject to this. We cannot have that happen. And I felt that that is what the Senate had to do to step up to its responsibilities. We are supposed to have debates on the issues, not impeachments on the issues. We're not supposed to say that if you disagree with someone on policy, then that's suddenly a high crime and misdemeanor. That would degrade government. It's clear that Republicans aren't interested in working with Democrats to fix the problems at the border. Who caused the problems at the border? Well, never mind. Schumer continues. In fact, if they wanted to pass the bipartisan proposal, that thing was junk, by the way. It didn't secure the border. All it did was have all kinds of earmarks and make all kinds of rules that would actually make it harder. But that's beside the point. We put it together and have a debate on it about policy, fine. If Republicans, instead of spending time on this meritless impeachment, worked with Democrats on border reform, then we might have actually gotten something done. If House Republicans want to have a serious debate on border security, we welcome it. And that's not true, but that's beside the point. Everyone knows what is happening at the border is terrible and needs fixing. These people caused it, but they're saying, oh, it's horrible. Well, it's funny because they act as if it just suddenly poofed out of the air. Oh, wow, suddenly we got this border issue. No one knows why, but, wow, this is terrible. I mean, that's the way they're acting. Let me get back to what he was saying. Everyone knows what is happening. The border is terrible and needs fixing. That's not a secret. The president knows it. Secretary Mayorkas knows it. Both parties in Congress know it. That's exactly why we had a bipartisan bill to fix it. Strongest security bill in 30 years. Right. Donald Trump told his Republican allies in Congress to kill this border bill before we could even debate it. So, of course, now it's Trump's fault, even though Trump's not in office, and they've got him tied up in court case after court case after court case based on politically motivated, should I say frivolous, and political waste of time. So he's accusing, the Republicans with this articles of impeachment of doing what the Democrats are doing with Trump. Now, Schumer is correct that impeachment should not be used for policy disagreement. That's true. He claimed the accusation against Mayorkas does not amount to what could be considered high crimes and misdemeanors. On that, he is incorrect. This is not policy disagreement. The problem is the Democrats do not believe the president and therefore his cabinet officers are required to execute the laws of the union regardless of if they agree with the laws. Good immigration laws are on the books. Donald Trump executed those laws faithfully, and during his tenure as president of the United States, the border was not a major issue, and the number of illegal aliens crossing the border was minuscule compared to the numbers we are seeing today. However, the Democrats act as if they are surprised that the border is a problem, and as if there are no immigration laws on the books that can resolve the issue. They want new legislation filled with provisions they are more in agreement with and earmarks for their greedy friends and allies. No new legislation is needed. Donald Trump proved during his presidency that the laws on the books are sufficient for securing the border and properly processing immigrants. I love immigration. I have no problem with immigrants wanting to come into the country, but I want them to go through the process. If any changes are needed, they are not needed when it comes to securing the border, but simply in streamlining the process for those who choose to legally go through the immigration protocols already in place. So in short, this is not a policy disagreement. The impeachment by the House of Representatives was not launched because the Republicans in the House suffer from disagreeing with policy. Mayorkas and the Democrats are refusing to execute immigration law that is already in place, and that is a violation of the United States Constitution. The House having the authority to impeach is a part of the system of checks and balances, and the Senate is required by the Constitution to take this impeachment seriously because President Biden and Secretary Mayorkas are both violating the Constitution by not carrying out existing immigration law that the Trump administration was successfully carrying out. If violating the Constitution does not qualify as a high crime and misdemeanor, what does? Is it violating the supreme law of the Is not violating the supreme law of the land a severe case of maladministration of office? And is not maladministration of office by refusing to carry out provisions in the Constitution worthy of impeachment? The dangerous precedent being set here was not by the House of Representatives, but by Schumer and his allies in the U.S. Senate. Their refusal to take articles of impeachment seriously is a violation of the Constitution and sets a dangerous precedent of the Senate refusing to carry out its duty of holding the impeachment hearing when one is warranted. That would be like the judges of this country refusing to preside over criminal trials, despite the evidence and despite the fact that a case has been brought to the courts, simply saying, nah, we don't need to hold the hearing because we're not going to hold trials because of a policy disagreement over whether or not these people are breaking the law. Let the criminals keep doing whatever they are doing. We have more important things to do. Could you imagine if our criminal courts acted in that manner? I mean, debate is a wonderful thing, but this is not about simply disagreeing on policy. Laws are on the books. Laws are being broken. The administration in place refuses to carry out the law. Apprehend the lawbreakers and deport the lawbreakers as the law requires. New legislation is not needed to secure the border. The legislation needed is already there. And the Democrats simply refuse to carry out the letter of the law and then claim the crisis is not their fault, but the fault of the former president who actually carried out existing law and did not have this kind of crisis during his presidency. The move by Schumer and the Democrats was not one to save the country from frivolous political stunts, but to create their own political frivolous stunt by demanding that our border remain open and to stand in open defiance of the law and the security of this country. A dangerous precedent has indeed been created, but because it's the Democrats who refuse to work with the GOP, and because it's the Democrats who refuse to fix the problems at the border by simply following law that already exists. As always, the idiocy is a matter of projection. Gaslighting, we like to call it. The Democrats, once again, have accused their opposition of being guilty of the very thing that they are guilty of. It is the Democrats who have degraded government and the rule of law. It is the Democrats who are not interested in working with their opposition to fix the problems at the border. They want the pork and dangerous reduction of security in the recent bill to reign supreme over law and order, which already exist on the pages of federal law and are being carried out by Trump. The immigration problem didn't just suddenly begin out of some sudden event in the world. A crisis did not suddenly appear out of thin air when Biden took office. The crisis began when Biden reversed all of Trump's executive orders that were in place to secure the border and apprehend those who broke the law when they tried to illegally enter the United States. The Democrats have no interest and having a serious debate on immigration because they want open borders because they know that the people illegally crossing the border vote Democrat when they fraudulently cast votes on election day. I guarantee you, if the illegal aliens voted Republican, the border would be sealed up tighter than when Trump was president. The Democrats would make sure of it. But because of policy disagreement, the Democrats, with Schumer in the lead, are violating the United States Constitution, the supreme law of the land, by refusing to hold an impeachment hearing that they are constitutionally obligated to hold. Schumer and every one of the senators who voted against holding the impeachment trial against Secretary Mayorkas should be removed from office for violating their oath to the Constitution of the United States and made ineligible to ever hold office again. The actions of Schumer and the Democrats amount to nothing less than insurrection against the United States Constitution, for it is they, by refusing to secure a border being crossed by persons from countries who are enemies of the United States, who are aiding and giving comfort to the enemy. The definition of treason in Article 3 of the United States Constitution. Serious charge? Absolutely. And they are guilty of it. All right, next topic and what has popped up. And this is very important to Christians, what we've watched happen in the world. Iran has decided to launch drones attack against Israel. Israel's considering a retaliation. And so I wrote an article about this, and I titled it Iran's War Dress Rehearsal. And in the comment section, somebody responded saying, well, Doug, you know, you're saying here that we need to support Israel, but what if these are not the real Jews? They're, you know, Russian Jews, Kazarian, whatever. And I respond, that's not for us to determine. God told us we're to support Israel. Whether or not it's a mixture of real Jews and not real Jews, or only a bunch of conversions, or what, that's not for us to decide. That is not for us to determine. God said, you will protect Israel. You will bless Israel. And that's what we need to do. I'm not going to sit here and try to figure out what percentage of the population is lineage Jews and which percentage of the population is conversion and which percentage of the population are actually a bunch of atheists anyway. That's not what God asked us to do. When God granted to Israel the promised land, he'd already warned the world to leave Israel alone. Genesis 12:3, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Any nation that supports and defends Israel will be blessed by God. Any nation that seeks to harm Israel will face an outcome far worse than expected. God does not issue empty promises. History is full of examples of the curse and blessings associated with that prophecy fulfilled. Egypt came first in a long line of civilizations who sought to oppress Israel. God sent Moses to warn Pharaoh, telling him, let my people go, that they may serve me. But Egypt refused. The outcome was a series of serious plagues, terrible plagues, unleashed on Egypt, untold suffering on the Egyptian people. And even after Pharaoh let the Israelites go, he hunted them down, only to have his chariots and horsemen destroyed when Israel crossed the Red Sea. Afterward, the great civilization of Egypt faded into mere memories of history. En route to the Promised Land, Israel had to journey through the land of the Amorites. King Sihon gathered his army and to fight against Israel, and Sihon's kingdom was annihilated. After Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, God delivered them to Midian, who oppressed them for 7 years. When Israel cried out to the Lord for rescue, the Lord raised up Gideon and used him and a small army to save Israel. Midian also vanished into the darkest pages of history. Babylon's king Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem and captured all its inhabitants, exiling God's people from their homeland. Years later, Nebuchadnezzar's son, Belshazzar, commanded his followers, wives, and concubines to drink from the gold and silver cups that had been plundered from the temple in Jerusalem. And as they did so, they blasphemed God until a disembodied hand wrote a warning on the wall of the king's palace. And Daniel was brought in to interpret the words, and he revealed they were a warning that God had numbered the days of Babylon's kingdom. You have been weighed in the balances and found wanting, Daniel told the king. That night, Belshazzar was killed and Babylon was invaded and destroyed by the Persians and Medes. The Seleucid Empire and its ruler, Antiochus IV, persecuted Israel several decades before the birth of Christ, outlawed Jewish traditions and religious practices, and ordered the people of Israel to worship the Greek deity Zeus. He sent an army to slaughter those who would not obey. What followed was the Jewish Maccabean Rebellion. God struck Antiochus with an incurable torturous disease, and his body was swarmed with worms when he learned Israel had defeated his army. In the 19th century, the Russian Empire once was home to the world's largest Jewish population. Russia's government confined them to ghettos and forced them to convert to other religions. The Russian people blamed the Israelites for everything from economic problems to political instability. The anti-Jewish violence continued into the 20th century, and many Jews were beaten and murdered. The Romanov dynasty had ruled Russia for three centuries, but lost the throne in 1917 because of the Russian Revolution. The last Tsar, Nicholas II, and his family were executed in 1918. Nazi Germany is probably the example best known by most folks. Hitler's Germany, according to historical records and scholars, killed 6 million Jews in the Holocaust. Hitler's thousand-year Reich only lasted 12 years. In the end, Hitler committed suicide and his corpse was set on fire. Islam's hatred of Israel goes back a dozen centuries. And when Israel was resurrected as a nation in 1948, their welcome by their Islamic neighbors was immediate invasion. In 1967, the states of Egypt, Jordan, and Syria collaborated in an attack on Israel during the Six-Day War. In both wars, while Israel was vastly outnumbered and outgunned, Israel was not defeated. Israel has prospered, and her land has become fertile and prosperous. Muslims, aside from those who have enriched themselves through the sale of oil, largely live in poverty. The curse, however, has only begun. In 2015, Israel's Netanyahu proclaimed, "For in every generation there were those who rose up to destroy our people. In antiquity, we faced destruction from the ancient empires of Babylon and Rome. In the Middle Ages, we faced Inquisition and expulsion. And in modern times, we faced pogroms and the Holocaust. Yet the Jewish people persevered, and now another regime has arisen, swearing to destroy Israel. That regime would be wise to consider this. I stand here today representing Israel, a country 67 years young, but the nation-state of a people nearly 4,000 years old. Yet the empires of Babylon, Rome, are not represented in this Hall of Nations. Neither is the thousand-year Reich. They're seemingly invincible empires are long gone. But Israel lives. The people of Israel live." Following the October 7, 2023 attack by Hamas and the war that President Netanyahu is waging at this time, Iran continues to flex its military muscle in the Middle East, as it has been ever since its Islamic revolution in the 70s. In a show of force against Israel and support for Hamas, Iran sent a drone attack over the skies of Israel earlier this week. Lebanon followed with their own attack, except it was not really an attack. Flashing lights on the drones Iran sent made them easy to see and easy to take out. And Iran has a lot more equipment. They could, if they really wanted to invade Israel, they would have done so. It was a show. It was a way of advertising that if Iran wanted to, they could send their machines into the Israeli sky. Iran launched a production, a Hollywood production. That's all it was. It was a show. It was an illusion. It was a testing ground. It was testing the water, whatever you want to call it. But the Biden administration paid for it. We have been giving Iran money and Hamas money and so on and so forth. The Biden administration has done this. Out of one side of his mouth, he says he supports Israel, and through his actions, he does otherwise. The Biden administration told Israel shortly afterward that the United States, under his watch, will oppose any Israeli response to Iran's actions. So Iran has done what they've done. Israel's told by America, you will not respond. Of course, I know Israel better than that. I know Netanyahu better than that. There will be a response. Now, if Iran had actually meant to attack Israel, they would have sought to compromise Israel's defense system. Maybe using the same style of cyber attack used to open the gates for Hamas last October. And they would have used Hezbollah and the Houthis and Iraq and whoever else and whatever is left of Hamas to move against Israel all at once. Iran has plenty of money, thanks to Biden, but they are not ready for the war that people fear the United States is being dragged into in the Middle East. Their goal, for the moment, is to harass Israel. And Iran is happy simply using their proxies rather than hit Israel with Iranian resources. We've been seeing exactly that. October 7th was by Hamas. Then we saw Houthi attacks on shipping in the Red Sea. Iran's influence then led to the Iraqi Shiite attacks on the U.S. base in Jordan that killed like 3 service members. Iran, for the moment, would rather pull strings and attack through resources not their own. It's a production. It's a show. It's an illusion to throw people off a little as they use American money to continue to build Iran's nuclear weapons program. Iran, however, has to act quickly because they know if Donald Trump winds up in office in January, their window of opportunity will slam shut. If Iran continues to stand against Israel, and if the U.S. continues to play the games like Biden has been doing, sending mixed messages about support for Israel, we may find ourselves facing an outcome we did not expect. The promise God made to Abraham is eternal, and God curses those who curse his people. Israel was created by God. Israel's existence is a testimony to God's existence. The continuation of Israel in today's violent atmosphere reveals God's active providence in the lives of his people. If Iran or the other Islamic countries move hard against Israel, the invaders will be defeated. World powers in history are persecuted. Israel do not remain great. Israel may be tiny, but the country is far from insignificant. And I pray that the United States will continue to bless Israel rather than the opposite, as we've been seeing with Biden and as many in the Democratic Party have been demanding. And you saw it, right? You saw the protests and the shutting down the Golden Gate Bridge and all these anti-Israel movements in America that you would have never seen before. While historically the American Christian has been Israel's best friend, if as a country we stand against Israel, God's justice will not remain idle. And as I tell you this, I am reminded of Thomas Jefferson's quote about God's justice. Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Our records indicate you've been lied to. Welcome to the truth.
Douglas V. Gibbs.
All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Tired of the lies? Come here for the truth. Douglas V. Gibbs.
Douglas V. Gibbs' latest book is out, A Promise of Truth, Self-Evident, Part 1, Early American History. This is part one of a three-book history series in which Doug goes through the history from the Saxons, well, in other words, before America was formed, the very beginnings of her political system, all the way to the election of Jefferson. Part 2 will be the 19th century. Part 3 will be modern history. Doug's latest book, though, A Promise of Truth Self-Evident, Part 1, Early American History, is available. Go to Amazon and look up A Promise of Truth Self-Evident by Douglas V. Gibbs, or check out our store real soon. We've got our warehouse ready, almost ready, and you can buy the book directly from us at douglasvgibbs.com/shop. Hi, this is Douglas V. Gibbs, advocate for restoring the Constitutional Republic and host of the Mr. Constitution Hour on K-Praise San Diego, 9 p.m. Saturdays. Attacks against liberty around the world are increasing. The enemies of liberty have infiltrated the halls of government, and they have conquered every institution we need to restore the biblical and constitutional foundation of America. Leftism is putting the squeeze on our liberty and personal well-being. It's not hopeless. I have been planting strategy information and establishing tactical hubs around America. Faith, education, advocacy, restoration. Check out my books, including my latest, Repeal Democracy. Listen to the Mr. Constitution Hour on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. on K-Praise and become a $9 per month patron at douglasvgibbs.com. Help fuel the movement that has the anti-liberty left on the run. Go to douglasvgibbs.com. Click join, click patron, become a member of the movement. Let's work together on the strategies to save America. douglasvgibbs.com. All right, welcome back to the Mr. Constitution Hour here on K-Praise, San Diego's Christian station, AM and FM for North County and San Diego. All right, welcome back. It has fascinated me how we've got 91 charges against Donald Trump during an election year. Politically motivated, frivolous, politically motivated junk. And once again, they've been gaslighting. This is what Schumer accused the House of Representatives of doing. And in reality, that's what they're doing with Trump. Same stuff, actually worse. But anyway, and they go after Trump and claim all these different things, yet they turn their eyes a different direction when it comes to Biden and what's been going on with him and what he's criminally been doing his entire career as a professional politician. And the Republicans, well, they've been kind of on top of it, which, we have the Biden classified documents case initiated over a year ago, and that continues to resonate through the halls of Congress and the corridors of power in Washington, D.C. And a special counsel, Robert Hur, released in February. That report has been recently reviewed by Congressman Mike Waltz, Republican from Florida, who painted a complex picture of highly classified materials found at President Joe Biden's residence. Now, in early 2023, Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed Hur to investigate the circumstances under which classified documents ended up in Biden's Delaware home and his former office. The investigation concluded without charges, but raised significant concerns about Biden's memory and potential risks to national security. Highly classified and relevant to current national security threats, Representative Waltz described on the documents on X, signaling ongoing worries among lawmakers. He called for an immediate damage assessment from the intelligence community just last week. In a tweet, I just reviewed a portion of Bison's classified documents that were taken from his basement by Special Counsel Herr. They are highly classified and relevant to current national security threats. We need an immediate damage assessment from the intelligence community. Herr's report, although clearing Biden of willful misconduct, highlighted several troubling aspects to the president's handling of sensitive information. It noted Biden's frequent memory lapses. He could not recall important dates or details about his tenure as vice president or even significant personal events like the date of his son's death. Now, I'm a firm believer that what might be going on is tyranny, but it's being cloaked as incompetence. In other words, little old man doesn't remember. Does he really not remember, or does he not want to admit? I know we watch him every day. We see how he stumbles and all that. He is either really just about gone or a really good actor. But anyway, so Mr. Biden's memory, though, according to the report, is significantly limited. His cooperation with the investigation will likely convince some jurors that he made an innocent mistake. I didn't know what I was doing because I can't remember, kind of thing, right? This is what the report stated, hinting at the possibility that they were not deliberate acts. They were deliberate acts. But anyway, the document also acknowledged that Biden's actions, while possibly not criminal, could still have legal implications. The special counsel considered his advanced age and cognitive challenges as factors that could influence a jury's decision in a hypothetical trial. It would be difficult to convince a jury that they should convict him of a serious felony that requires a mental state of willfulness, the report speculated. Experts interviewed expressed diverse options or opinions on the implications of the findings. Others, however, believe it casts a shadow over his fitness to hold office, given the serious nature of the allegations and his pivotal role in national security. One might consider that if he is indeed not remembering, if he is indeed, as the report says, it's not an act, well then, if there needs to be a criminal investigation, maybe it needs to be against Jill for elder abuse. If he is seriously, cognitively that far gone, he needs to be removed from office. Not that he belongs there in the first place. We know about the cheat in the 2020 election. That's a different discussion for a different time. So the report detailed Biden's struggles during interviews with special counsel investigators. Like I said, I believe it might be an act. It's easier to play stupid because, you know what? Well, he didn't know. Oh, gosh, what are we going to do with you, poor old man? If he isn't that stupid, if he isn't seriously forgetting critical details of timelines, forgetting the specifics of discussions during his vice presidency and significant policy debates, such as those about Afghanistan, then it becomes clear that maybe, just maybe, he should not be holding any office of any particular stature. In other words, maybe he should not be president of the United States, much less a senator or something else like that. So adding to the case, testimonies from other witnesses, such as FBI agents, indicated ambiguous recollections about how the documents were stored and accessed. So I guess they're going through a little bit of memory lapses too, suggesting systemic issues with memory and record keeping among Biden's team. Do they all suffer from his age? In his interview with our office, Mr. Biden's memory was worse. He did not remember when he was vice president, and his memory appeared hazy when describing the Afghanistan debate, the report added. As a result, since February, Biden has lost a favorable lead in the polls to GOP frontrunner Donald Trump, and recent polling data reveals a tight race. Well, I don't believe it's tight. I believe that right now Trump is the most popular president in the history of this country. I think he might even be more popular than George Washington was at the time he was president. Trump and Biden are closely matched according to the news I get, according to the polls and according to the critters out there supposed to be the experts. According to an average of the polls by The Hill and Decision.shq, and once again, these are left-leaning organizations that are doing these polls. They're already 10 to 15% off anyway. The two are tied at 45.1% based on 658 polls, according to their polls. Trump's narrow lead has been diminishing with only 0.6 percentage point advantage as of Tuesday. You have a feeling if this election is actually conducted fairly honestly, they'll see a landslide worse than they saw against Hillary in 2016. A New York Times Siena College poll indicates Trump is leading by just 1 point. An ActiveVote poll shows him ahead by 6 points. And an Ipsos poll puts Biden in front by 4 points. So we have a president who can't remember anything and claims he knows nothing about these classified documents. And these are highly classified documents. These are documents that was in his garage that pertain to intelligence issues today. What's important to our country today. And we've got, and it's not just Biden that's the problem. There was a recent Senate Oversight Committee meeting where Senator John Kennedy, Republican from Louisiana, confronted Attorney General Merrick Garland with questions about the Department of Justice's handling of alleged tax crimes by Hunter Biden, you know, Joe's son, particularly concerning the expired statute of limitations related to his income from Ukrainian energy company Burisma Holdings. The heated exchange thrust the spotlight once again on the Justice Department's operations and decisions under Garland's stewardship. And Merrick Garland, be honest with you, has shown that there's somebody else that needs to be impeached. There's somebody else that needs to be removed from office. He has shown that not only is he incompetent, he's a liar. He is right there with Schumer and Biden and a lot of these other criminals. These legal challenges and what he's been up to, it is all politically motivated. Merrick Garland knows darn well what he's doing. So Kennedy moved the conversation towards the Hunter Biden case and asked, well, Mr. Hunter Biden did not pay taxes on $1 million in 2014 and 2015 for hookers, for Lamborghini, for strip clubs, for sex clubs, for porn website memberships. Why did the Department of Justice let the statute of limitations run? Garland, you know, being the smooth guy he is, he's being cautious about it. He indicated that there's ongoing investigations. Lawyer talk, right? You know, and law enforcement talk, and, you know, these people, how, well, we've got this ongoing investigation, but we'll let you know as things come up kind of attitude, right? Well, what he said to Kennedy was, as you well know, Senator, that investigation is being conducted by Mr. Weiss, who was appointed by President Trump to be the U.S. attorney in Delaware. It's now a special counsel. He will issue a report which will explain. In other words, well, we don't know, but he's looking into it. But, you know, when we know, we'll let you know. That's what you get when you deal with people like this. Well, do you know anything? Do we have any information? We'll let you know. Well, Kennedy was unsatisfied with that response. So he pushed a little harder, a little further, suggesting institutional failings allowed Biden to avoid prosecution. Hunter Biden walks free on not paying taxes on $1 million from 2014 to 2015 because the Department of Justice let it happen, right? Asked Kennedy. And throughout the interrogation, you know, Garland reiterated the stance of non-involvement. It's just an ongoing investigation. I don't know anything. It's going. We'll let you know once we know. You know, and highlighting his role in appointing Weiss as special counsel to ensure unbiased inquiry and that he doesn't really know what's going on. It's all on Weiss right now, and, you know, he's deep in his investigation. Quote, I'm not going to know the intricacies of Mr. Weiss's investigation. There would be no point. It's Mr. Weiss who's responsible for this investigation. I don't know, in other words. I don't know, and I can't tell you because I don't know, and I've made sure I don't know because I put it in the hands of somebody else who is so deep in what he's doing that he hasn't talked about it, and he doesn't really know because, you know, he's doing what he knows. You know, the back-and-forth spotlighted the larger assessment by Republicans who allege that the DOJ under Democratic leadership has been lenient, if not negligent, in prosecuting alleged wrongdoings by members of the Biden family, the Biden crime family. So Democratic members of the committee and supporters of the administration argue that these attacks are politically motivated, aiming to undermine President Joe Biden's credibility and distract from legislative agendas. No, crimes were committed. This is not like with Trump where it's conspiracy to commit a crime. It's, well, he said something, and we think that what he said will lead to him committing a crime. Did you notice that none of, and I think I talked about this a couple weeks ago, that none of the charges against Trump are actual crimes? It's conspiracy to commit a crime. Well, yeah, but he said that, so he's inciting or he's considering or, but none of it as actual crime. Here we have actual crime. Here we have actual crimes being committed, and there's evidence. Oh, well, now this is just political theater against the Bidens. And David Weiss, the U.S. attorney from Delaware, was appointed as special counsel by Attorney General Merrick Garland in August 2023 to investigate Hunter Biden, President Joe Biden's son. The role grants Weiss extensive jurisdiction and minimal oversight from the Department of Justice to focus on allegations of tax evasion and potentially other charges. Hunter was indicted in December of 2023 on 9 related tax-related charges, including both felony and misdemeanor offenses. He is accused of failing to pay $1.4 million in taxes between 2016 and 2019. The probe also examines a gun charge linked to drug use, although such charges are less common. As special counsel, Weiss operates with a high degree of autonomy. He can bring charges in districts beyond his Delaware jurisdiction, potentially including California and Washington, D.C. The special status aims to ensure the probe's impartiality and thoroughness under what Garland has called extraordinary circumstances. Weiss has testified before Congress, stating that he adheres to standard Justice Department procedures despite his broad authority. He indicated that his investigative efforts have not been obstructed by other jurisdictions, though he has encountered some procedural delays. The investigation's timing could significantly impact the political scene, especially with the upcoming election. How much you want to bet he doesn't have anything until after the election? How much you want to bet that he will keep stonewalling and keep looking into it and doesn't have anything to report until after November of 2024. How much you want to bet on that one? Of course, there are concerns among Democrats that this investigation with Hunter Biden and all that might affect Joe Biden's reelection campaign. Well, it will if it comes back sooner than thought. Sure. Absolutely, it could have an impact. It could have a negative impact, sure. Well, crimes have been committed. What they think was going to happen when crimes were being committed. We've got highly classified documents, Biden's hands. You got the Hunter laptop. You got Hunter's tax evasion. You got the money laundering. You've got the big guy, influence peddling. I mean, and they think Trump is the crook. It is amazing, to say the least. We have, I mean, and that even doesn't even get into the fact that we've got an election now coming up, and the left is already trying to do what they can to influence that election. Right? Did I talk about it in the last show? I think I did. You know, the Executive Order 14019, where Biden has written an executive order saying, agencies of the federal government, you're going to hammer it out to make sure we get out the vote. We register people. And who is the federal government using to do this registration effort? Organizations in demographic areas. So in other words, your tax dollars, federal tax dollars, are being used to help the Democrats win the election. That's what Executive Order 14019 is all about. I mean, it's March 2021, but it's to shift the left into higher gear for Democrat Party electioneering. Why, we're promoting access to voting. No, you're not. You're drumming up more voters in regions, in areas, in places where you know Democrats are the majority. That's the reason why you got these trials with Trump the way you're doing it. Getting your juries exactly the way you want it. All right, well, we're out of time now, so thanks for spending the time. We'll be back next week. Mr. Constitution Hour, United we stand, combined we kick butt. God bless America and God bless you. Be sure to visit Douglas V. Gibbs often. Become a patron. Go when you go to the page up there on the link bar, it says join with a star right next to it. $9 a month helps fund what we do. Until next time, thank you for listening. Keep in touch. Stay in tune on DouglasVGibbs.com, because we need all of us to turn this around. Have a great week. Stay constitutional. God bless. Bye-bye.